focusing on Wendy's is because of the five largest fast food corporations in the country. They're the only one currently not participating in this program. And so by that, they have chosen to move their purchases of tomatoes from Florida to elsewhere. And in that way, they're choosing to run away from their responsibility to this, to the farm workers within this industry, and are choosing to run away from the responsibility of conditions that they have helped create in the fields for decades. And they have even chosen to come out with a code of conduct for their suppliers, which actually has no teeth in comparison to the Fair Food Program that the CIW has created.
How does Wendy's compare to other fast food giants that the CIW, the Committee of Immokalee Workers, has taken on, like, Taco Bell, that's owned by Yum Brands?
Right. Taco Bell, Burger King, Subway, Ajo, Chipotle within the fast food industry are all paying one extra penny more for every pound of tomatoes that they purchase within the Fair Food Program. They're also agreeing to a worker-created code of conduct. And so those two really central things Wendy's is choosing to not do. They're not paying extra for the tomatoes, which would otherwise go directly to farm worker wages. They're also not agreeing to work with this program, which would protect the human rights of farm workers in the fields. This program has radically transformed the industry. It is also now expanding. We're not just talking about Florida anymore. We're now talking about bell peppers and strawberries. We're talking about six other states on the East Coast, and it has the potential to just grow even more than that. And so Wendy's is choosing to not be part of the solution.
Well, I want to thank you for being with us, and of course, we'll continue to follow this struggle. Natalie Rodriguez, member of the Alliance for Fair Food. Many thanks to the students here at OTV. I'm Amy Goodman. Thanks so much for joining us.
You are listening to KBOO Portland, where the time is now 8:01. Coming up next is the Abe and Joe Talk Radio Show with our hosts Abe Proctor and Joe Uris. Today we'll look at superdelegates and the rigged Democratic nomination process.
KBOO Community Radio is proud to co-sponsor War Against the People, Israel, the Palestinians, and Global Pacification, a public lecture by Jeff Halper, Tuesday, February 23rd at 7 p.m. at the First United Methodist Church in Portland. Jeff Halper is the longtime head of the Israel Committee Against House Demolitions and is known for his activism on the ground in support of Palestinian rights and a just peace. Jeff will be on a book tour for his recently published book, War Against the People. Again, that's War Against the People, Israel, the Palestinians, and Global Pacification, a public lecture by Jeff Halper, Tuesday, February 23rd at 7 p.m. at the First United Methodist Church, 1838 Southwest Jefferson in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of Happening 2016, a homegrown music forum taking place February 27th from 1 to 5 p.m. at the Apano Jam Space in Portland. Happening 2016 will be an exploratory conversation about how the music scene works in Portland and how artists, professionals, and supporters shape the scene. Panelists include Simon Tam, Jenny Logan, DJ Cliff, and will be moderated by Rebecca Miller. Again, that's Happening 2016, a homegrown music forum taking place February 27th from 1 to 5 p.m. at the Apano Jam Space, 8114 Southeast Division Street in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
Tune in to KBOO on Tuesday, March 8th from midnight to midnight as we celebrate International Women's Day with 24 hours of programming produced, hosted, and engineered by women. There will be live music, public affairs with a feminist focus, and female DJs playing all kinds of music to celebrate the creativity, variety, and zeal of the women of the world. Again, that's Tuesday, March 8th, from midnight to midnight, here on your community radio station, KBOO Portland.
This KBOO program is made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from Tom Dwyer Automotive Services, a full-service automotive shop located next to Portland's Selwood Bridge for over 30 years. They're a Blue Seal certified shop committed to client care and community support. Information on their eco certification, client carbon neutral program, courtesy shuttle, rentals, and more at tomdwyer.com or by calling 503-230-2300.
The donkey is tired and thin. The elephant thinks he'll move in. They yell and they fuss, but they ain't fooling us, 'cause they're brothers right under the skin. It's the same, same merry-go-round. Which one will you ride this year? The donkey and elephant bob up and down on the same merry-go-round. The elephant comes from the north. The donkey may come from the south. If you look, you'll find the donkey's behind, but they've got the same bit in their mouth. It's the same, same merry-go-round. Which one will you ride this year? The donkey and elephant bob up and down on the same merry-go-round. If you want to end up safe and sound, get off of the merry-go-round to be a real...
That's a catchy tune. Say merry-go-round.
Just for our audience's awareness, that was an independent Progressive Party song from 1948. The candidate for president was Henry Wallace, who had been vice president, but he was manipulated out of that position in 1944, which put Truman in that position. And then, of course, very shortly thereafter...
Dewey defeated Truman.
Yes.
Right, I saw Truman holding up the headline.
Said, yeah, he thought it was pretty funny. That was the Chicago paper. That is pretty funny. Okay, this is...
No, Truman defeated Dewey. I'm just joking about that.
Do you think people don't know that?
I think some people don't know that, yeah.
Okay. That's probably true.
Yeah.
That's KBOO 90.7 on your FM dial here in Portland, Oregon. This is the Abe and Joe Talk Radio Show. That's Abe Proctor. I'm Joe Uris. The number to call, 231-8187, and we're going to talk about what?
We're going to talk about the Democratic Party's nominating process for president.
What, a process?
Process, yeah. It might not be as straightforward and clear-cut as a lot of people imagine.
Yes.
But more than that, I'm going to come right out and say that it is weighted in favor of candidates who enjoy the establishment's backing.
Could we say fixed?
Fixed. You could say fixed, rigged. Yeah. Uh-huh.
Okay.
Loaded.
Weighted.
Yeah.
Well, we'll talk about this a bunch.
Yeah,
and next week, I think we're going to have supporters of Hillary and of Bernie.
Of Bernie, yes.
So that'll be something people can call in about, too.
Yeah. So we're going to try and do something a little bit novel on today's show.
What's that?
And talk a lot less and let our callers talk a lot more.
Okay.
We're going to try and do that.
Are we?
We'll see how it works out.
Oh, yeah, sure.
Okay.
Okay.
So let's set the stage.
So I won't say a word.
Perfect.
All right.
In fact, you can go. Just set down your headphones and go.
Oh, yeah. I'm out of here.
503-231-8187 is the number to call today. If you want to leave us a written comment on Facebook, you can do that. Facebook.com/Abe and Joe. Also, you can follow me on Twitter at HonestAbe72.
That's a new thing, isn't it?
That is a new thing.
Yeah, I don't want to do that.
Okay, I know you don't want to do that.
I hate all that.
You're a Luddite.
I am a Luddite.
Yes, you are.
Yeah, and I'm proving over and over again to be correct.
That's up for debate.
Okay.
In fact, we can ask our listeners. Okay.
No, not today.
Not today. How does the nominating process work for the Democratic Party?
Okay. How does the Democratic Party nominating process work, Abe?
Well, in most people's minds, and it works this way to a great extent, it must be said, you have a series of primary and caucus elections around the country leading up to the party convention in the summer.
Right.
The candidates are apportioned delegates to the convention based upon their percentage of the popular vote in each of the primary elections. Pretty straightforward, right?
No.
Let's say State X has 100 delegates in play. Secretary Clinton gets 55% of the vote. Senator Sanders gets 45% of the vote. So Secretary Clinton would get 55 delegates to go to the convention. Senator Sanders would get 45 delegates.
Sounds reasonable.
Sounds reasonable, yes. But that's not how it works.
No, of course not.
It works that way, as I said, to a certain extent. But waiting in the wings, in reserve, as it were, are a large collection of delegates, roughly 30% of the total available, who are known as uncommitted delegates, or more colloquially, as superdelegates. These are a collection of basically party insiders, mandarins, elected officials, former presidents even, sitting senators and representatives, governors, members of state legislators, in some cases lobbyists, as Engineer Steve points out. All of these people are delegates that go to the convention no matter what, no matter how the popular vote is apportioned in each of the primary elections.
Okay, now to be fair, prior to this process,
right,
it was all backroom stuff, like 48, for example.
Right.
And it was all done in smoke. Well, everybody smoked cigars, and it was all guys, smoke-filled rooms.
Yes, that old stereotype holds pretty true.
For those days,
yes. But the superdelegate system is relatively new. This is only the second election cycle. The Democrats have enjoyed a superdelegate system.
But the Republicans don't have superdelegates.
No, the Republicans just apportion delegates based on the popular vote. Theirs, ironically, is a much more straightforward process.
Creepy.
Although they have to compete in the Fox News primary, which is an entirely different animal. We won't talk about that right now. So here's the deal with the superdelegates. They're not apportioned by vote. They get to decide themselves whom they're going to support before the convention. And about 90% of them have already declared their support for Secretary Clinton. So what this amounts to is that Hillary essentially has a 30% buffer in her back pocket that she can bring out to overcome any advantage that Senator Sanders may have accumulated in vote apportioned delegates. So it's in the bag for Clinton at this point. The party establishment is in the bag for Clinton.
Well, I mean, maybe it's more fair than you're saying. Maybe
it's not. It's exactly as unfair as I'm making it out to be. In fact, this whole system was designed to insulate the Democratic Party from insurgent candidacies, just like Senator Sanders' candidacy.
Huh.
And you know how I know this?
How do you know
because
this?
Because the chair of the Democratic National Committee said as much in a live television interview last week. Let's listen to this. This is with Jake Tapper of CBS
Bernie
News.
Sanders in New Hampshire by 22 percentage points, the biggest victory in a contested Democratic primary there since John F. Kennedy. But it looks as though Clinton and Sanders are leaving the Granite State with the same number of delegates in their pockets because Clinton has the support of New Hampshire's superdelegates, these party insiders. What do you tell voters who are new to the process who says this makes them feel like it's all rigged?
Unpledged delegates exist really to make sure that party leaders and elected officials don't have to be in a position where they are running against grassroots activists. We are, as a Democratic Party, really highlight and emphasize inclusiveness and diversity at our convention, and so we want to give every opportunity to grassroots activists and diverse, committed Democrats to be able to participate, attend, and be a delegate at the convention. And so we separate out those unpledged delegates to make sure that there isn't competition between them.
I'm not sure that answer would satisfy an anxious young voter, but let's move on.
There you have it. The unpledged delegates exist so that the Democratic Party doesn't have to contend with grassroots activists.
Well, but she says this is going to represent everybody.
No, that's categorically untrue.
Debbie Wasserman Schultz could lie.
The Democratic Party and its moneyed connections to the donor class through the superdelegate system are trumping the will of the voters in this election.
Trumping.
Yes. That works on many levels.
Yeah,
wouldn't you say?
Yeah.
So the question I want to put to you listeners today, first of all, what do you think about this? Is this a good idea? Is this something the Democratic Party needs? Does it need to protect itself from socialists like Bernie Sanders?
I want to interrupt for a second on that because it's really important. Sanders running initially was running as a, more like a protest candidate or supporter of more radical changes within the economic and political sphere. He claims to be a democratic socialist. Democratic socialist parties frequently have dominated and certainly have a major role in European politics. Mm-hmm. They are not communists and they are not socialists in the way in which the old Soviet bloc called themselves socialists. In fact, what they are people who have come to the conclusion, this is something that started on more in Northern Europe than anywhere else, have come to the conclusion that a mixed economy, one which provides certain services for the people and allows for the development of capitalism at the same time, is the best way to govern the economic system. So when he talks about democratic socialism, he really is talking about a model that comes out of Northern European traditions mm-hmm. and that takes care of poor people through governmental systems, through tax transfer. It is not, and it's really important, it is not anything like the totalitarian systems that evolved out of the Soviet bloc.
Nothing like it. And it must be said that a lot of conservative critics who are scared of Bernie Sanders and his revolution will often square that circle and equate what Bernie talks about to communism and totalitarian socialism.
Right.
So it's not fair and it's cheating and it's shorthand and it's intellectually lazy and it's dishonest. So let's get
that
on the
table. But it works.
But it works. In fact, you might describe democratic socialism as heavily muzzled and regulated capitalism.
Yeah.
Right.
Right.
Let's go to the phones. David, good morning.
Oh, hey, morning. You know, I come from a family, my mother was an elected official in Democrat in Missouri, and so I was kind of brought up with the Democratic Party, although I'm a Green. And when you listen carefully to, I think that was a quote by Wasserman Schultz.
It was,
played,
yep.
And she didn't call them superdelegates, she called them unpledged.
Unpledged, yes.
Right, and so technically they can change their position at any time.
Yeah, technically they can.
Yeah, so I want to urge people. I'm a Green, like I say, and I personally prefer somebody like Ralph Nader even over Bernie Sanders. But, you know, he's okay as that goes. But I think that there's some fear-mongering in order to chase people away from further support of Bernie as if she's already won. She clearly hasn't already won. And Bernie's doing a hell of a good job of keeping her honest. And his comparison against Trump is actually, he's got a better chance of beating Trump than she does. So
that's what polling data would seem to indicate. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. And then one other thing too. I don't know if you've ever kept track of how these polling companies have been bought and sold. But the Bush family back in 2007 was trying to buy Nielsen plus, I think, seven other companies. If I remember right, it wasn't the Carlyle Group that was buying them. I think it was the Blackstone Group was trying to buy all these polling companies. And, you know, the Bush family are big into both of those companies. So, you know, don't be ashamed or slowed down about supporting Bernie. As a matter of fact, I make a point to call up right-wing shows and challenge the Republicans and these neocons especially on their pretense, because they aren't even real conservatives. As a matter of fact, I got on Bill Bennett's show this morning and challenged him on monopoly. You know, these guys keep building monopolies. And the very idea that that they've allowed, for example, the media, one-third of the media is now run by Rupert Murdoch, who's a foreigner. You know, if these guys are so afraid of foreigners, why are they allowing Rupert Murdoch to run one-third of America's media?
Well, he's got the right colored skin. He's not one of the scary foreigners.
And he's an Australian, after all.
Well, you know, it's what's even creepier, if you think about it. He bought the Wall Street Journal in 2007, and within 6 months, we had the 2008 crash. So you can't imagine that his Wall Street Journal, through some flight of honesty, decided to expose the Wall Street crash. I personally think that he did some insider work to induce that crash. And if you have you all ever studied the Carlyle Group?
No.
Well,
yes.
If you look it up.
Carlyle Group, I haven't.
Yeah. Yeah, you may know that Carlyle Group is owned not only by the Bush family and a whole bunch of other ugly characters, but they're old former policymakers, and they even on their website they say that they buy companies in distress, and they aren't buying little companies; they're buying the biggest. And so it's to their advantage to ruin the economy so that they can buy companies in distress.
Okay.
And so when you look at the way that they've dominated the economy for decades, I hear a big bong. What's that?
That was your 3 minutes.
Oh, I
expiring.
See.
Expiring. So, right. Yeah, please wrap it up. Please.
Yeah, well, I guess let's see. The corporate state structure. I provided you're part of the National Federation of Community Broadcasters. I did a piece, Rocco and Mussolini's Treatise on Fascism, a bunch of years ago.
Yeah.
And if you look it up, you listen to it, Rocco and Mussolini described fascism as the corporate state, and that it was a big round table of all these monopolies. And so the people still get to elect a leader, but they either get the choice of electing an idiot or a dictator, and a dictator is going to be strong against competing against.
All right, we need you to wrap it up here, sir.
Or the monopolies have the choice of having us elect an idiot so that they have an easy bargaining power. So the corporate state guarantees the fall of democracy, and that's where we are. We've got a choice of idiots or dictators.
Okay, thanks a lot for the call.
Thank you very much for the call.
And I actually find nothing to disagree with.
No, definitely not.
I have a bad attitude, you know.
I know you do. Comes with being a Luddite.
It comes with being an observer.
Right, an observer through non-modern means, a Luddite.
No, through all means.
Sue writes into the Facebook page, that's facebook.com/Abe and Joe, to say, please point out that in the first Obama election, 2008, even though Hillary had most of the unpledged delegates, or superdelegates, they switched to Obama when the popular vote went to him in the primaries. They can do so again, and it would tear the Democrats apart if they were to go against the popular vote. To be clear, the press did not report them out last time, I'm told. So the press this time around is making this situation worse. Sue has a very good point. If Senator Sanders were to have a delegate lead going into the convention,
right,
it would be very unlikely, I think, that the unpledged superdelegates would then thwart the will of the voters and throw their support behind Hillary and essentially nominate her in a coup.
Well, a couple of things. Next week, we're going to try to have supporters, representatives of both the Sanders and Clinton campaigns. That's number one. Number two, it is really important to understand that the Bernie Sanders campaign is not organized, literally not organized, in the sense that the Hillary campaign has been for since 08. And in fact, Sanders could be characterized more as a protest candidate than anything else. His program, in terms of the public awareness, is very limited. And I think that he's finding real troubles, real conflict, in that he has not ever built a strong base among women or minorities. And this represents an interesting problem for what I would characterize as the more progressive movement in the Democratic Party.
Indeed. 503-231-8187. David, good morning.
Hi, good morning. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
Great subject. And finally we can get it out. We are not a democracy. We haven't been a democracy for decades. We are a plutocracy, and we are run by the ruling class. And, of course, all this stuff goes on behind the scenes, and they tell us that we are a free country and we freely elect our officials. Well, we don't. And what you guys have been saying is clearly points it out. And if you can take it another step, is this Byzantine antiquated system of the Electoral College. I mean, that is the most outdated system.
Yes.
It was built by when we had wagons and horses and we couldn't send people all the way to Washington, D.C. in the 1700s and 1800s. So this Electoral College thing is another one that no one wants to get rid of because it's huge power for these people. But
yes.
If we are truly a democracy, everyone we elected and every measure we elected would be based purely on popular vote.
That's true.
That's what they tell us.
Yep.
One person, one vote.
Right.
Well, people don't realize that you can be your votes won't count because the Electoral College is going to go fill all their delegates to the guy who got 51%.
You're absolutely right, and I want to add one other thing. The framers of the Constitution were not interested in democracy. They were interested in a republic. Their model was more along the lines of Rome in the late Republican era than it was along the lines of what we consider democracy today. And it's really important to understand that. The fact is that women couldn't vote. People without property couldn't vote. African Americans, of course, were slaves, couldn't vote. Native Americans couldn't vote. It was a rigged game to support yeoman farmers and rich landholders and very wealthy commercial operators.
Yeah, and you know, the one other segment that is blatantly a plutocracy is how we elect our representatives and senators. Because, you know, that was set up because, again, we couldn't get all the people to bring the votes to Washington, D.C. from the Oregon Territory, so we sent one representative. We don't need those guys anymore. We can have mass electronic voting, and I know everyone's going to jump up on that, but you can see that we can have that. Our bank system is based on electronics. Every time we log into our bank, there's a little number on the screen. We can tell if it's true or not, and so we can have that. But, of course, we won't have that for centuries because our representatives are part of the plutocracy. They're going to hold on to that. They don't want to have to go home and get regular jobs. So, you know, people, I think, who listen to this radio show really makes me. Hopefully people will wake up and see that, you know, all the bluster that people throw out about being a free country and democratic, it's not true here. So,
okay, well, thanks, and you've cheered us up a lot.
Yeah, well, thank you.
Thanks very much for the call.
Get this out. Gotta get it out.
All right, so long.
Okay, now, in case you're wondering, folks, that bell indicates 3 minutes is up, and what we're asking people to do is to frame, there it is again, to frame their thoughts so that they can get it into 3 minutes.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, that way we can have more people.
I got to disagree with your assessment you just made, though.
Which assessment?
The system set up by the founders of the United States was more like early Republican Rome than late Republican Rome. Just wanted to say.
Oh, okay.
Republican Rome, things were getting pretty chaotic.
Well, that's certainly true. A lot of civil wars. A lot of murder.
A lot of government by personality rather than government by institution. All right. 503-231-8187. Who do we have next, Steve? We've got a comment on our Facebook page. Mark writes in to say, Bernie is definitely the electable one. The downfall of Jeb shows what could happen to Hillary as people turn against warmongers and cardboard plastic politicians.
Bernie's, wait a minute, cardboard or plastic?
Cardboard slash plastic politicians.
Oh, okay.
Bernie's triumph in New Hampshire with 85% of voters under 30 was a triumph of truth-telling in a demoralized culture manipulated by a corporate media that always distorts context and history. People want countermeasures against the neoliberal rollback and the bank bailout of trillions that led to refeudalization. Strong words from Mark this morning.
Refeudalization.
Okay. I've heard similar thinking along these lines. It's very provocative. People are suggesting that modern-day capitalism is much like feudalism, in which capital replaces land and corporate executives replace kings. That laborers have been reduced to little more than serfs.
Well,
with no real power.
Certainly the effective power of labor, organized labor or otherwise, has been severely reduced since the height of its power. Incidentally, the height of its power was also the period of a Republican government and several Democratic governments, Roosevelt, Truman, and then Eisenhower. And this was the period of time when workers were paid better in real money than today. And it was a time when organized labor was a powerful force, both in the Democratic Party and elsewhere. And in fact, it was our greatest period of prosperity. That's something that most people today probably have forgotten or didn't know or weren't around to know.
Yeah.
So there you go.
So the number to call, 503-231-8187. I want to remind people that they can leave written comments on Facebook, facebook.com/Abe and Joe. Go ahead and like that page while you're there because it makes us feel good.
Like that page while you're there. Do you realize how the language has become completely, completely distorted?
Yeah, I realize it, but I'm sure you have no idea.
We're going to fight about this forever, aren't we?
Yeah, we certainly are, yes. You can also follow me on Twitter at HonestAbe72. That's a good way to continue this conversation throughout the rest of the week and leading up into next week's show.
And next week's show, as I say, as far as we know, will be advocates for Sanders and Clinton.
That's right. Let's go to the phones. Red Willow, good morning.
Good morning.
Love your name.
Say, excuse me?
I said I love your name.
Oh, thank you. My thought is, you know, you were talking about the Democratic Party, and I've been a long, well, I was a long time Democratic Party member. But I am totally out now. Would you like to know why?
Why?
After Hillary Clinton talked to Elizabeth Warren, who was really hot at that time, who could have actually have given the women and the other people, all of the minorities, the vote, after she dropped out, after seeing Hillary, I forget what date that was, but it was, you know, about a year ago, I guess, when it looked like she was going to have some serious competition. I think the Democratic Party gave Elizabeth Warren a vice president nomination for sure, whoever came out of here to drop. That's just a guess, intuition, women's intuition, if you want. But what do you think about that?
Well, I think it's an interesting idea. I don't know enough about what happened at that time to comment on the accuracy of it, but it's a very interesting idea.
It is.
But you would see how that would break my heart on the Democratic Party.
Yeah.
My shero, Elizabeth Warren, went ahead the party line and party loyalist, which she's not really supporting to be.
Well, one of the things that's important about Elizabeth Warren is that she really has had very little experience in the national government. I think that part of her strategy, whatever else was going on, as you suggest, there might have been deals being done, but whatever else was going on, she probably, I have not talked to her, perceives herself as unready yet for the presidency and interested in it. So I would expect to see her in 8 years jumping into the contest and being far more acute.
Okay.
But you're still seeing a party loyal.
Oh, no question about it. No question about it. I agree that there's party loyalty involved. And you're right. Deals go down, and we don't get to know them officially.
Why would she drop out suddenly when she was so hot and we haven't heard much from her? You know?
Because she felt that she wasn't. I don't know the answer to that, but you raise an interesting
question.
Point. Yeah.
Okay. Thanks. Bye.
Hey, thanks for the call.
Thanks for the call.
503-231-8187. I have a question for our female listeners. And it has to do with Secretary Clinton. My question is this. It's a wonderful thing that we have a woman candidate who is a very viable candidate and stands a very good chance of being the next president of the United States. So my question is this. Does it matter to you as feminists, as people who are interested in seeing a woman occupy the White House at long last, does it matter to you that she is married to a former president? Would it have been better if the first truly viable female candidate didn't have that prior connection?
Well, I'll go further than that, because I think it's important to realize this. Bill Clinton is responsible for a lot of the problems that we face today.
Indeed, he
is. His insistence, and this is relevant right now to the Pacific Trade Partnership, Bill Clinton was the NAFTA guy. And it turned Mexico into a dope field rather than a corn field. Bill Clinton has had many, many connections, which essentially established a very reactionary government and set the table for what is what came after. So I'm not saying she is he. That's not true. But certainly his influence, his power, his success, and his popularity are significant factors in this current campaign. And that bothers me a great deal.
Yes, all that notwithstanding, I'm wondering, from the perspective of female listeners, would you rather see the first truly viable female candidate for president? Would you rather that she had no previous connection to a former president? That's my question.
Okay.
All right. 503-231-8187. Who's next? John, good morning.
Hi, good morning. Thank you for the topic. I'll try to be brief, and I hope that you guys will give your thoughts on what I'm about to address. It's the voting for the lesser of evils, as Ralph Nader has pointed out, that when we vote for the lesser of evils, we inevitably just progress down the slippery slide to lower and lower and lower. I can't vote for any candidate who's attached to the corporate state. And you brought up the TPP, which is for me the overriding ominous cloud on the horizon. So I won't be voting. I mean, if Bernie manages to be able to pull it out, I'll have somebody that I can actually vote for without holding my nose. I'm not going to be able to hold my nose and vote for the establishment candidates. I'd like to hear you.
Well, wait, now, Hillary has said she's against the TPP.
And you, okay, well,
I'm just saying.
That's true.
I'm glad that you're injecting some levity into the discussion, because it's always nice to hear a joke this early in the morning. And Bill Clinton felt our pain as well. So I'm unable to take any of that seriously, which is part of the reason why I can't hold my nose to vote for somebody who's both a warmonger and thoroughly attached to the corporate state. I can't do it.
Okay.
And I'd like to hear you guys talk about, you know, your thoughts about voting for the lesser of evils as opposed to actually voting your conscience.
Okay, I appreciate that.
Thank you for the call.
There's a problem here, which is the limit that we face, which is that we, in this nonprofit world, are not allowed to come across and actually to be advocates for one candidate or another in any election. Of any sort, local or national or international, for that matter, if there were such things. And we have to be very careful about this.
We do.
So I hesitate to give what can be interpreted as support.
Well, I can say this, that I feel that frustration every 4 years. I feel that frustration that we have to do that sort of mental calculus, the sort of electoral gymnastics, where we have to weigh our tepid support for one candidate and measure that against the absolute absurdity of the other candidate. That's a difficult situation to be in, and that's the one that progressives seem to be in all the time.
And I love your abstraction there.
Thank you.
That was very clever.
Let's go back to the phones. Francis, good morning.
Hi.
Hi.
As a woman, I could care less whether Hillary was married to a president before or not. Mm-hmm. What my concern would be is who she is and what she's about. Mm-hmm. And no woman that I know is going to vote for her because she's a woman. The women I know aren't going to vote for her because of the warmongering. Mm-hmm. And when her advocate, Madeleine Albright, made that statement about the place in hell for women who don't support other women. Mm-hmm. She lost a lot of women right
there. She did. Please let me be clear. I wasn't suggesting that you or anyone else should support Secretary Clinton because you happen to be a woman voter. That's right. Not what I was suggesting.
And it doesn't matter. I mean, if she was married to Bill Clinton and had a different policies and philosophies, then yeah, that'd be nice. But having a woman there isn't the big deal for me. What is a big deal is that the young people are for Bernie Sanders, and what amazes me is the news media on the corporate media, how they portray this election is insulting to our intelligence. They're talking about a horse race, and that's all they talk about is the horse race.
That is all they talk about.
They don't talk about the issues. They don't talk about anything substantive. It's all about the horse race and who's doing what.
No, you're absolutely right.
Yeah, the young people, such as Eric Garner's daughter, who is supporting Bernie, she says she's supporting him because he's a protester like me. Now that means a lot. Now in the social media, everyone is talking about Bernie, you know, and it's a whole different way of communicating that I think the corporate media is missing totally. And that's why they keep being shocked and surprised, because they're still talking this nonsense while the substantive conversations are going on in social media.
Do you think the corporate media are missing this out of ignorance, or are they willfully ignoring
it? They're trying to sway it, but I don't think it's going to work. I don't think it's going to work. I'm really hoping it doesn't work.
Well, let me just say, Francis, that I believe that the media is representing the interests of a capitalist state. And if there's any differences in media about which of the candidates they support, it's because they don't know which is the best candidate for capitalist state. I have a lot of statistics sitting here right in front of me that indicate all of the Republican candidates' proposals for tax cuts would essentially lead us into a real depression. Anyway.
Yes. And then I have one more point to make. Madeleine Albright, when asked about the over 200,000 children who were dying because of the, and you were talking, so I get a second.
okay.
And said, you know, it was a necessary thing to happen that these babies die. You know, over 200, say that to their mamas and tell me that you are supporting women, and maybe that place in hell is a place that you need to think about. you take care.
Okay, hey, thanks for the call.
Bye-bye. Always appreciate
you. All right, yeah, 231-8187. What we're talking about is the machine of the Democratic Party.
That's right. Brian writes in to say at the Facebook page, as a foreigner resident, who has started exploring the possibility of moving back to Europe, Cuba, or Ecuador, I've written this before on many forums, but the U.S. electoral system is far too long, beginning the day after midterm or presidential elections and dragging on for 2 years, which simply plays into the hands of the super rich who can afford to maintain staff and lobbyists to influence the outcome. The Kochs and Sheldon Adelson are decidedly feudalist, while the average citizen of the United States of amnesia increasingly struggles to get by. Also, I feel that a lot of people would like to vote for Sanders, but when it comes down to the final vote, are basically afraid of true change. As for a first woman president, don't forget what Thatcher wrought in the UK. Not that Clinton is that bad. Thank you, Brian.
I think that's a good comment. Good insight.
Yeah, I agree. Who do we have, Steve? David, good morning.
Yes. You know, I believe the things you say about the Democrat Party, what's going on. But I have this fear of this trying to get this perfect presidential progressive candidate.
Mm.
And I think that comes about because of these sayings like Tweedledee and Tweedledum, and I gotta hold my nose, whatever that means, to vote for somebody. These things always favor the Republican when you talk this way about the system, you know, being so corrupt that you got, you know. And it pushes for this. We got to get this perfect candidate. And if we get him in, the Republicans will back away a little bit because we finally got our perfect candidate in. And I can bet you that 80 to 90% of the people, young people, that vote for Bernie, whether he gets it or not, will never even vote in the midterm election at all because there's no perfect candidate there for them to see.
Hmm.
Now, does that theory hold any water or not?
Well, it is true that left-leaning voters tend not to turn out for midterm elections the way that right-leaning voters do.
Yes.
Well, I think your point is important, that we will give up the pretty good because it is not the great.
Right. I think I see Hillary as a stepping stone. I don't see her as a perfect candidate at all. I know things about her too, and that pretty much, I think, you know. So look, beware of the PPPC, perfect presidential candidate.
All right, great. Thank you very much for the comment, and I think it's useful to remember that.
Yes.
And I you know,
just keep it in mind. That's
really
all.
I also think that, you know, looking back, Barack Obama with only, 2 years in the Senate?
Yeah.
Was definitely not seasoned enough. And then, of course, we never were clear what his politics were.
Joe, I've listened to you when Peter Weisbach was on the radio. Remember that?
I do. I was being paid in those days. Oh, yeah, boy. But, oh, boy.
I've listened to talk radio, KGO San Francisco, for years.
Yeah.
And I enjoy it. Thank you very much.
Oh, sure.
Hey, thanks, sir. Who's next, Steve? Barbara, good morning.
Good morning. Thanks for this conversation.
Sure.
I would love to have a female president. I was going to vote for Hillary, but Obama sounded a little bit better, so I ended up voting for Obama. But unfortunately, Hillary, I think she is great. She's very strong. But unfortunately, she is sold out to corporate America. And I'm angry when she says about Bernie's push for universal health care. Oh, it's impossible. It's going to cost this. It's never going to work. Well, to me, that's negative speak. And it is possible. We just have to all, you know, it takes all the people to push for it.
Mm-hmm.
But, and also, I mean, I know her association with the military-industrial complex. I understand the need for defense, but we spent trillions of dollars, and where have we gotten? We still are fighting the same war. We still have, you know, terrorists that hate America. And, of course, then there's her association with the biggest and most profitable banks, the too big to fail banks, who mm-hmm. bailed out. The taxpayers bailed them out. And so it makes me angry that she takes money from them. I think she would be a strong president. She'd be better, I would hope, than Trump or Cruz. But
well, I don't know how anybody could be. I don't think it's a. I don't think it's even a fair comparison because those guys talk nonsense.
Yeah, it's kind of embarrassing as far as I'm concerned. You know, for Americans, you hear those, you know, people like Trump and Cruz talk. It's
Well, it's weird. It's just weird.
It is. It is. It is bizarre. It is. Yeah. And talk about big banks. Wednesday, there's a great forum at the Unitarian Church downtown at 12th and Salmon about, again, we're going to try to start a community bank. We were working on a state bank based on the model of North Dakota,
mm-hmm.
where instead of, you know, all the big profitable banks taking away money from the state, a state bank like North Dakota would keep the profits in Oregon and be able to give loans to people that really need them instead of just.
Well, you know. you're bringing up some of the great reforms that around the turn of the 20th century were so significant, which was, the movement was collectively labeled populism. And as a progressive movement, many improvements were in fact made, not as many as I would like. And in fact, I think that basically the evolution of American involvement in European politics in World War I essentially crushed all that. And after that came the Red Scare and the very conscious effort to discredit organized labor and to discredit any kind of legitimate left-wing politics in America. So historically, there was an enormous reaction on the part of the powerful. And I'm done, and I guess I cut you off a little bit.
If you would like to sum up, please do so.
Oh, no, that's. I think that's about it. I just wanted to put a plug in for Wednesday night at 7 o'clock at the Unitarian Church, a talk regarding community banking.
No, I think community banks are a great idea, and I'm really glad you brought it up.
Yes, thank you.
I could say a lot more, but I'll stop.
Okay, no,
hey,
that's
thanks
fine.
Thanks very much for the call.
Great.
She brought up something that's really been bothering me, and I want to take just a second to talk about
it.
The Bernie Sanders candidacy has brought a number of previously taboo topics to the table in a big way. I'm talking about things like actually implementing a universal single-payer healthcare system, making public college education free for everybody.
As it used to be.
As it used to be. Offering new parents paid family leave.
As it ought to be.
As
and as it is in
be.
Europe.
Yes.
Capitalist Europe.
In capitalist Europe. Massive infrastructure, long overdue infrastructure spending. All these things are on the table in a big way. And inevitably, the criticism of them takes the form much like this. Well, oh, how are you going to pay for that, Bernie? Oh, that's too expensive. We can't afford that. But yet, when somebody like Ted Cruz talks about carpet bombing ISIS, the response is not, well, how are you going to pay for that, Ted? Or when Donald Trump talks about building a massive wall across the entire Mexican border, nobody says, well, how are you going to pay for that, Donald?
You know, the Mexicans are going to pay for that.
Well, you see the point I'm making
here. Yes, I do. I'm
just
being sarcastic.
This is all these sort of responses, all these criticisms, and it must be noted that some of them are coming from establishment Democrats as well. All these criticisms amount to, here's a bunch of reasons why we can't manage to do what every other civilized nation in the world has managed to do. And it's nonsense. Of course we could do these things. It is simply a question of will. That's all.
Well, I think more than will, it's a question of power. And I think the fact of the matter is that this country is not a democracy. It is nominally and formally a structure that represents something very similar to, but not the same as democracy.
Yes, I will stipulate to that. But I would also like to hear people respond to people like Ted Cruz and ask, how much is your war going to cost?
Well, and how are
you going to do it if you're cutting taxes?
Right. And the whole concept of cutting taxes, I think Bernie Sanders is very clear. He wants to tax the rich, which I'm all in favor of.
Yeah, me too. Sue writes into the Facebook page. That's facebook.com/Abe and Joe. Regarding Hillary as the wife of a former president, I don't care. She is more likely to win based on their political machine, but it does give her baggage. But that could be true with anyone. I'd rather have Hillary than Britain's Maggie. I think that's mostly right, but I don't think it could be true with anyone because no other female candidate, there isn't any other female candidate right now, was married to a former president.
Well, it's a peculiarly, it's a unique situation.
It is a unique situation.
And there is baggage and advantage to that.
Indeed.
And it's again, this is a very, the politics of today are very laden with all kinds of baggage.
Yes, all the more so because we seem to be at a moment in history where we're doing our best to try and shed that baggage.
Maybe.
Yeah.
Maybe.
Maybe that's why we're so cognizant of it.
That could be. I am. You know, I've been watching this stuff, and I am amazed at the low intellectual level of argument, particularly, I have to say, on the Republican side. It's just stupid. And I'm not saying you should vote for Democrat or Republican. I'm just saying the Republican candidates, each one outdoes the other with stupid, patriotic, naive, dangerous, and sometimes, in the case of Donald Trump, extremely fascist ideas.
Let's go to the phones. Anita, good morning.
Good morning. Could we get back to the establishment delegates?
Sure.
I would like to know, if the numbers are available, how many are honest to God Bernie delegates, how many are honest to God Hillary delegates, that is, voted by people like me in primaries, and how many are the establishment delegates? That's number one. Number two, does anybody know, I have heard that the establishment delegates are made up not just of our elected representatives, but also of lobbyists?
That's true.
And do we know what the breakdown on how many lobbyists there are as opposed to how many at least elected representatives? And number three, back to whether it matters that Hillary was married to Bill Clinton. I think the role of being a woman candidate is so blooming difficult that whatever path a woman can legitimately get there is something that how you get there however you can when you're breaking new ground. And she does have credentials of her own, and one should not forget that.
That's
not
very true.
Just
yes.
That she's running as first lady.
Very true.
And I'd love your answers, and I'll take them off the air, please.
Okay, I have some of the data you requested, but not all of it. Here is how the Democratic superdelegates or unpledged delegates break down. There are a total of 715 of them.
Of the 2,000-something that it takes.
Of the 2,000-something that it takes.
Right.
Of that 715, 20 are categories as distinguished party leaders. That's current and former presidents, vice presidents, congressional leaders, and DNC chairs. 20 are Democratic governors, including territorial governors and the mayor of D.C. 46 are Democratic members of the Senate. 193 are Democratic members of the U.S. House of Representatives. That includes non-voting delegates to the House of Representatives. 436 are elected members of the Democratic National Committee. Now, what I don't have are information on how many of those actually work as lobbyists. One would assume that they are the ones not holding elected office right now at the moment.
Right. Yeah, well, you know, part of the pattern of establishment politics in America is people flip between the private and public sector, and when they're in the private sector, they're functioning largely as lobbyists.
Now, of that 715, these are the superdelegates. 438 have already indicated their support for Secretary Clinton. 16 have indicated their support for Senator Sanders. Three have indicated their support for Governor Martin O'Malley, or one must presume, though, that they're going to change that support since O'Malley's no longer in the race. And 258 are uncommitted. Certain sources I have read suggest that most of those uncommitted delegates are leaning toward Secretary Clinton. So she's already got more than a very strong majority of the 715. If a proportional number of those currently uncommitted superdelegates also pledge themselves to her, that becomes an overwhelming majority.
But there's a danger here. If we all can be persuaded that there's no real reason to protest or to push a candidate other than Hillary Clinton because of this kind of information, if we walk away, in other words, we're giving up not just a long shot that might turn true, but in fact a very great possibility that it'll be an open convention, and that in fact a candidate who is more progressive and perhaps more in favor of social change toward justice could be a real president, a viable presidential candidate. Mm-hmm.
I also need to offer a correction. I was mistaken in how long the Democrats have had the superdelegate situation.
Okay.
I was under the impression it was only the last two electoral cycles, but it goes all the way back to 1968.
Aha.
Yes. Jeff writes into the Facebook page to say, I was interested in Abe's comment that the Dems superdelegates have only been in the last two election cycles. I thought the superdelegates were brought into play in 1984 after Mondale got trounced. It actually goes back farther.
Okay, and that's important, and that is a social control mechanism or a political control mechanism instituted when things got around the Vietnam War and other things got a little bit weird.
Now, there are 13 superdelegates who come from Oregon. Interestingly, most of them have yet to declare their support for either Secretary Clinton or Senator Sanders. That's interesting that most other states, people have already declared their support.
But I understand that our senators and our Earl Blumenauer are supporting
Hillary.
Earl
Blumenauer has declared for Hillary. Ron Wyden has declared for Hillary, as have Ellen Rosenblum, Kurt Schrader, Suzanne Bonamici have all declared for Hillary. Kate Brown, Laura Calvo, Peter DeFazio, Frank Dixon, Lupita Maurer, Jeff Merkley, Karen Packer, and Larry Taylor are as yet uncommitted.
That's interesting.
Yeah.
So those are people one can reach out to. One of the neat things about Oregon politics is that actually the candidates are more, not just candidates, people in office are more accessible because it's a smaller state. Trying this in New York is like, bleh.
Yeah, forget about it. I want to remind people that they can follow along at the show and offer comments on Facebook. That's facebook.com/Abe and Joe. And they can also follow me on Twitter at HonestAbe72. And I encourage you to do that if you like the Twitter machine. It's fun. I'm just getting to know the Twitter machine. It's a good time.
I may have to do that.
No, don't. Don't hurt yourself.
It's dangerous. I'll get electrocuted.
Let's go back to the phones here before the end. Juan, good morning.
Hey, guys.
How are you?
So, I'm good. Two things. One, you remember in 2008 when Obama was elected?
I do.
And he had a super majority. He had 60 senators in the Senate, mm-hmm. Democrat.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And he had the House.
Mm-hmm. Yes, he did.
Now, let me tell you something. These people say, oh, well, they don't vote in the midterm elections. They don't vote. They had this huge groundswell of support when Obama was saying hope and change.
Mm-hmm. That's true.
2 years later, when there hadn't been any change, I mean, there was nowhere near the change people were hoping for. Let's put it that way.
No, I think you're right. I mean, I think there are two things about Obama that are important. The first is that he never really got out of the Chicago School of Politics, period. And the second thing is he ran into a solid Republican wall.
Well, yeah, and you know what? He sort of willingly ran into that because it seems that it was more important for him to be friends than it was to do what he was supposed to do when he was elected for his base. And you know, it's like nobody owes anybody their vote. And when the Democrats act like a bunch of dolts, they don't get the vote. It's not that people don't know any better. It's that if the Democrats aren't going to do what they need to do, why bother? Okay, that's my first thing. The second thing is, did I really hear a guy come on today and say Bernie's too good a candidate? Watch out for him.
I don't know.
I can't.
I don't recall that.
Beware. He even made a little joke about it. Beware of the perfect candidate. He wanted to do an acronym at the end. Do you remember that? Right.
Yeah, I don't know that he was saying Bernie Sanders is that perfect
thing
candidate.
I've ever heard.
Well, no, I think he was. I think he was generalizing about the fact that it's very unlikely, perhaps even impossible, to find the perfect person to be president of the United States.
Right. Well, nobody's perfect.
Exactly.
One last thing. We this time, what Obama squandered was this huge tidal wave of support.
Yes.
He had everybody, you know, everybody was ready to go. Come on, let's do this.
Hey,
he got there. He appointed nobody in his cabinet who was a progressive.
That last point is very important, but we have run out of time. Now, next week, we're hoping to have representatives of the Obama campaign. The Hillary campaign and the Bernie campaign. So stick around. Stay tuned to KBOO. We're the only station broadcasting in the Portland metro area that tells you the truth, really.
Yeah. And thanks, everybody. That was a good conversation today.
Yeah.
We'll be back at you next week.
Disorder from the sirens night and day, from the fires of the homeless, from the ashes of the gay. Democracy is coming to the USA.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud sponsor of the Pan-African Film Series hosted by the All African People's Revolutionary Party. The film this month is The Fall of Libya, showing Wednesday, February 24th at 6 p.m. at the Portland State University Smith Memorial Student Union in Room 329. The Fall of Libya is a short documentary of the role of imperialism played violently and illegally overthrowing the democratically elected Libyan government in 2011. Again, that's The Fall of Libya, Wednesday, February 24th at 6 p.m. at the Smith Memorial Student Union in Room 329 at Portland State University, 1825 Southwest Broadway in Portland. Again, that is 1825 Southwest Broadway in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
Good morning. You're listening to KBOO Portland, 90.7. It's 9 o'clock. Here's what's coming up this morning on KBOO. First on alternative radio, physician Camera Phyllis Jones speaks on race and health. At 10, it's Air Cascadia, headlines, interviews, and commentary with Chris